Hello, beauties. Welcome to my show, Power and Pleasure, All Things Women's Health. I'm your host, Kim Billick. I'm a women's empowerment and sexual health coach, Reiki master, yoga therapist, and occupational therapist. This podcast is going to be raw and juicy. And yes, we'll be talking about all things women's health uncensored. We'll be talking about periods, hormone health, sex, pleasure, pregnancies, all those things that may be going on down there that are making you feel uncomfortable. Anything that you may be feeling scared or ashamed to talk to your doctor about, your partner, your girlfriend, let's just consider this podcast Real Girl Talk. Be sure to check me out on Instagram at kimbillick_ or my website www.amala-living.com. Hello, beauties. Welcome back to my show, Power and Pleasure, All Things Women's Health Uncensored. So today I have actually my old coach here with me, Dani Taylor. She is co-owner of veganproteins.com and a vegan bodybuilding coach, athletic coach. And we are, it's not going to be uncensored today, but there's going to be a lot of valuable information here in regards to plant-based diets and kind of just talking about those things that women are concerned about when it comes to weight loss and building muscle. So, Dani, if there's anything else you'd like to add in regards to your specialty and what you do, and even if you want to share a little bit about your story of what got you here.
Yeah, sure. I could do that. I could share a little bit. So not a lot of people know actually that I actually grew up obese. So by the time I was in high school, I was about 210 pounds. We didn't have a lot of money. Unhealthy food is cheap. I just thought that it was genetics, you know, like a lot of my family was overweight. But I went vegetarian for ethical reasons when I was like 8, and then vegan for ethical reasons alone when I was 16. And that just started this sort of domino effect of me becoming healthier, realizing that my health was much more in my own hands than I ever thought that it was. And eventually led me to actually learning something about nutrition. Because when I went vegan, I ate a terrible vegan diet. But even that led me to lose weight. And then after that, all the interest in health and bodybuilding and fitness and all of that is kind of history at this point. But yeah, it wasn't always that way. So yeah, that's kind of my background.
Thank you for sharing it. I like how you say the unhealthy vegan diet, because I feel like there is a lot of misconceptions around that. You know, people think, oh, I'm going to go vegan. And then they're like, well, why am I not losing weight? And something I laugh about is I'm like, well, you can't go plant-based, you can't go vegan and, you know, go out for dinner and be eating potatoes and rice and beans and plantain. Like, we need to find this balance and still get these nutrients. Like, is this something that you experienced initially when you went, or something you see with patient or clients as they first transition?
I didn't see that, because what I was eating before I was vegan was so wildly unhealthy and to excess that even eating a crappy vegan diet for me was an improvement, you know? But that's not the case for everybody. Some people aren't starting from, you know, morbidly obese with a terrible diet. Some people are starting to be vegan with like a pretty okay diet. They're like relatively healthy. And in that case, simply omitting dairy and eggs or meat and fish or whatever is not going to automatically make you healthier. You know, there's a lot more to it than that. It was just in my particular case, what I was doing was so far from ideal that omitting dairy and eggs actually was enough to move the needle. But yeah, veganism isn't the weight loss diet by any stretch. Like, you can lose weight as a vegan, but that requires a lot of other factors as well.
Yeah. What are some of the big shifts that you see in people from a health perspective outside of weight loss when they transition?
So probably the biggest one that I see is almost kind of a bit superficial. Their hair, their skin, their nails generally improves. And I actually do think that's from the omission of dairy more than anything else. I know for myself, that was huge. I had like big cystic acne, all of that stuff as a vegetarian, but I was eating a lot of dairy. The other thing was I had like almost chronic ear infections and strep throat. And knock on wood, I've been vegan for 20 years and I've never had that ever since. And I do see that in a lot of my clients where they're like, I used to have all these infections and now I just don't have all of these infections. And I think a lot of that comes down to simply the omission of dairy. So I would actually suggest that for health purposes, dairy got to go. It's the first thing that I would pull out personally.
Oh, and I 100% agree with you. Like with any women that are going through hormonal stuff, dairy is a big thing to pull out initially because dairy causes inflammation and inflammation just causes so much havoc with our hormones.
Yeah. And
you could see a big shift with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And all of the quote unquote health benefits of dairy, calcium, vitamin D, there are plant-based ways to do that without all the negative sides of dairy, you know?
What would be some good suggestions for you for the listeners to hear for vitamin D, calcium?
The same way that we eat, a lot of people don't know this. Milk is not high in vitamin D. It's fortified with vitamin D. It's added to the milk. It's not like naturally occurring in milk. So other fortified foods, soy milk, almond milk, oat milk, almost all of these things are also fortified with calcium, with vitamin D, some with iron, some with other vitamins and minerals, but it doesn't have that inflammatory, mucousy, pussy effect that the dairy has.
And then, I mean, something natural that's good just to add is like being out in sunlight as much as possible. I guess if you're in colder places, that's not always necessary. Right. Mushrooms is something like... Yeah. Some vegetables are good things to add and stuff.
And some people just don't, some people intrinsically lack the factors to process and manufacture vitamin D. So if you, and vitamin B12 for that matter as well, if you feel like, you know, I'm doing all the right things, but my blood tests are coming back not right, like check and see if you are like lacking intrinsic factor or anything like that, because you might be a special case that needs to, you know, have a medical intervention to make sure you get those vitamins and minerals. It's not your fault. It's just, you just don't have it. So definitely if you're worried about that and you keep getting blood tests coming back that are off, get that checked out for sure.
Yes. Thank you for adding that. So aside from vitamin D, what are some other things that, you know, people that are transitioning into veganism or, you know, kind of hesitant of going that way, like other misconceptions that people have? I know protein is like a huge one. Where do you get your protein?
Yeah. Protein is the biggest. People are like, so what is the biggest question you get? And I'm like, it is still 20 years later, where do you get your protein? Like I hear it almost once a day for the last 20 years. So yeah, I'm kind of used to that one. But you know, it's a good point to bring up. I do think protein is worth talking about, even if it's a little bit of a tired topic. Because there's really two schools of thought here, and I don't agree with either of them. One is the sort of mainstream fitness world where it's like protein is everything. You need to get a ton of it or else your muscles are just going to evaporate. So there's that school of thought. There's also this other school of thought that is so far in the other direction, and we see it a lot in the vegan community, where it's like, protein doesn't even matter. Don't worry about it. You're going to get plenty of it if you just eat spinach and nothing else. And that is also not a great thing to do. I mean, will you die if you do that? No, absolutely not. But I think most of us want more than just like not dying. We don't just want to survive. We want to thrive. And I do think it's beneficial, as you know, like you've worked with me, like to focus on plant-based sources of protein, to at least know them and understand them and incorporate them on a fairly regular basis. If things like your hair, your skin, your nails matters to you, if having muscle tissue on your body matters to you, which it should, and especially as we get older, it definitely should. So I think that something a little bit more in the middle, as most things, usually makes the most sense.
Yeah, that's a good point to have. And I mean, we could even talk about myself. I remember before I went vegan with my old coach, he had me on 140 grams of protein. And this is like animal-based protein aside from a protein shake. And my stomach could not handle it.
Yeah. Well, if I recall correctly, and I'm doing this from memory from a few years ago, so bear with me. He also had you not eating much of anything else. Is that correct? Yeah.
At the end, it was your typical bodybuilding diet, like asparagus and fish.
Well, that sounds so terrible. Do you know how many bodybuilders go vegan just because they're so sick of that diet?
I could only imagine. But my body couldn't handle it. I was bloated, as gross as this sound. I was gassy. I was having stomach issues. And that was my push, actually, to go vegan. Mm-hmm. And then with you, I think I was doing 120, 130 at my highs, and I was okay. So like you said, it's finding that balance. And I mean, for listeners here, we're speaking in the bodybuilding world. If you are in the bodybuilding world, that is, you know, you are going to be eating that much protein at certain times. But if you're, you know, living your regular day-to-day life, depending on your size, I'd probably say, you know, 70 grams of protein around there.
Yeah.
But I always say bio-individuality, and that's why it's a nice thing. If you're, you know, trying to play and figure out like I'm trying to lose weight or gain muscle, it's good to have a coach that knows their nutrition and that could help you along this.
Yeah, I would agree with all of that. Like when we talk about bodybuilding, like we're talking about an extreme in and of itself, but you know, when you're doing it vegan or when I'm working with somebody, we try to make it as balanced as possible. So like, yes, your protein was certainly higher than you need to survive, right? When you were doing that, but also it was the inclusion of other things. We still had fibrous carbohydrates and colors and several different kinds of vegetables that sort of help you to digest that protein more smoothly, mm-hmm. you know, than when it's just like straight up fish and asparagus.
Yes. And this is a good thing to talk about specifically to women's health, like straight up asparagus and fish, you're getting very little carb and it's mostly protein and no fats. Mm-hmm. So it's really important to, you know, women are so scared of carbs or fats, but we need this all. Fats are especially very, very important for our hormone health. And this is what got me so passionate about women's health. This asparagus fish diet ended up me losing my period for 7 months. Mm-hmm. And so we need these fats, depending on our size, we need a minimum of 50 grams a day of fat. Mm-hmm. And also to help with our blood sugar levels, it's really important to not just have carbs, but to add some healthy proteins and fats with all your meals so that your blood sugar is not spiking. And then you're going through this roller coaster of energy and not sleeping and, you know, having hormone issues and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Totally. I 100% agree.
Yeah. So I just wanted to add a little bit of that in because I think that's good general information for whether you're in the bodybuilding world or not. Really important for women's health.
The other thing I would add is don't look to bodybuilders for health advice. Yeah. Like, I mean, if you're looking to the bodybuilding athletes for like, oh, I want to do what they're doing because they look so great. It's got to be healthy. Like bodybuilders on their competition day, that's like the least healthy that you're ever going to be in your life. Like it's an extreme sport. It's not overall health. And I think we forget that because the media just shows us these chiseled abs and beautiful ripped women. And we think that's healthy, but like 95% of women cannot maintain that and also maintain their health. So just a little aside there.
That's great. And I can speak to that. I can definitely speak to that. I know it's not healthy and it was a temporary moment. And then I go back to living that day-to-day life of eating healthy and getting all those nutritious things in.
Totally. Exactly.
So another big question I'm sure that you get asked a lot, and this is connected a lot to hormone stuff too, is soy. What are your thoughts on soy? Is it good for you? Isn't it good for you? And I know there's two schools of thought with that as well.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think it's really good for you. I think it's perfectly healthy. I think we've kind of demonized a bean. And, you know, we're not having this conversation about chickpeas, you know, it's like very specifically soy. And the reason that people are kind of like up in arms about soy is the phytoestrogens, the isoflavones. But do we ever talk about the other foods that are super high in phytoestrogens? Do you know flax seeds are super high in phytoestrogens? But we never hear about that. Beer, coffee, super high in phytoestrogens, but we never hear about that. We just hear about soy. Why? I believe that it's because the soybean industry became a threat. It became a threat to the dairy industry. They started making foods that became a threat to the meat industry. So we funded all these studies to find something wrong with soy. But if you really think about it, when we talk about the phytoestrogens, that are in soy, they're plant estrogens. It's kind of like what hemp is to weed. You know, hemp looks a lot like weed, can kind of smell like weed. It's not weed. And phytoestrogens are very similar in that way to estrogens. They kind of look like it. They combine to the receptor sites very weakly. But, you know, you talk about hormones a lot. I'm sure estrogen dominance comes up frequently.
Yes.
If anything, having a weak estrogen in our current world bound to an estrogen receptor site, that might actually be beneficial. And that's what a lot of studies have also showed, that soy is protective against certain kinds of, especially female cancers, where higher estrogen can be problematic. But the most interesting thing to me is most of the arguments against soy are coming from people who consume dairy and meat. And dairy is the actual estrogenic secretion of another pregnant mammal. So if we're going to criticize soy for having phytoestrogens when we're actually drinking an estrogenic secretion, like, I just can't take that particular conversation very seriously at that point. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does.
And okay.
No, and you bring up some really good points with that. And what I would just say in regards to like the hormone stuff, there are certain times of the month that maybe it's not ideal for us women to have say soy and higher estrogen photoestrogen food. So like when we ovulate, because that's like our highest when our estrogen is the highest. But for example, when we're hitting our luteal phase or when we're bleeding, our estrogen's at our lowest. So that would be a better time to be eating your soy and those type of foods. And with anything, it's bioindividuality. I love tofu, but I know if I eat too much, and people have probably heard me say this, I know I have a sensitivity to it. So my tongue starts to get a little swollen, like if I eat it like 5 days in a row. So I know my limits. I'm like twice a week, three times a week, but just like anything in moderation, right?
I mean, because you've worked with me, like I eat a lot of soy. I vegan 20 years, a lot of soy in my life. And I've gone periods, no pun intended, but I've gone periods with a, you know, just testing out like, okay, what is this like to be totally soy free for several months? And for me, it was just like no different. But I don't have a sensitivity to soy. Sometimes I'm like, oh, am I going to eat so much of this that I'm eventually going to sensitize myself to soy or gluten or something like that? But thus far, knock on wood, has not happened yet. But great. I do have some clients who are like, you know, straight up, they have allergies or sensitivities, or that's a totally different thing. And, you know, my theory of like, you can eat anything that you want to and achieve your goals when you're working with flexible dieting and you have your macros set up appropriately. So I think it totally should be up to the person of what they decide that they like to eat and what they like to include. That's going to be better than any meal plan on the planet, you know? Yeah. So I think individuality is absolutely key to anybody's success in like any endeavor that they take on.
And what feels good in your body. So, I don't know if you do this. I know you did. Well, we didn't know we would talk about this. Like, I know with my clients, some things like, cause soy is something that could cause inflammation for people. I mean, same thing with gluten, dairy. So I'll be like, hey, pull these things out. And then I, you know, kind of track, like, how do you feel if you bring it back in? So really like connecting that. Is that stuff that you do with your regular clients as well, when you're kind of playing around with?
Absolutely. But I actually find the number one culprit, this is kind of funny, when someone says like, oh man, I'm just like feeling so like bloated and full, and no matter what I do, we pull out pea protein. That's the first thing we pull out. And I don't want to say 90% of the time, but I would say probably like 60% of the time, people are like, oh my God, I feel so much better. I'm like, that pea protein, man, it seems to make a lot of people bloat. But then, you know, if that doesn't work, if they still feel the same way, we'll try other things. We'll look at their fiber content, because that is something that can happen with a lot of plant-based people, is they are actually taking in maybe more fiber than they ideally should. So sometimes we'll kind of pull that back, see what happens. But yeah, you know, you play with all these different factors, take it out, bring it back, see how people feel. Because at the end of the day, that's the most important thing, is like, it's your body. You know it better than I do. How do you feel in it? You know?
Yeah. I like that you're saying that, because I feel like doctors don't listen to you with that. I had an experience with that recently. I went to a new doctor, and I'm like, I'm having this. And he just wasn't listening to me at all.
Yeah.
So we've talked like a good amount about like some benefits with, you know, vegan diets and stuff. So if there's anyone still sitting here and they're like, I don't know if I'm ready to like make that transition. What are your words or like, how would you encourage someone in a positive way or help them through this transition?
Yeah, I think you have to make it fun for yourself. You have to really consider your mindset around this. If you're thinking about it already, like some seed has been planted. But if you're thinking about it in terms of, okay, well, if I go vegan, then I can't have ice cream. I can't have pizza. I can't have all these foods that you love, right? If you're thinking about it that way, why would you do it, right? That's not really motivating. That's not really motivating to make a change. But if you think about it, instead of like what you're going to exclude, think about what you can add in first. Like, oh, you know what I would like to do? I would like to have more leafy green vegetables in my life. I would like to have more nuts and seeds in my life or more berries. Or start thinking about inclusion first. And what you're likely to find is that it's going to crowd out some of the foods that are maybe not in your health's best interest. You know, you're going to be fuller, so you're going to eat less of that stuff. So that mindset of inclusion versus exclusion, I think, is really, really important. And then I would say make it fun. If you love pizza and ice cream and tacos, find plant-based recipes of ice cream and pizza and tacos that looks really, really delicious to you, and have fun going out and finding those ingredients and trying it out. Like, make it as pleasant for yourself as you can. And then the last thing I would say is like, find a community. Find other like-minded people who are interested in things that you are interested in, and try to be active in that community. Lean on them for support. You're probably not going to get it perfectly right out of the gate, and that's fine. You might never be 100% plant-based, and you know that's your life to live. But every step that you can take in that direction is probably going to benefit your physical health, your mental health. You know, if your social circles change for the better, then it can just improve your life in so many ways. And be damned the community that's going to judge you for not being perfect. Like, those people are not there to help you anyway. So who cares what they think?
I like that. I like that. And then so with your clients that are, I shouldn't say clients, but just the women that you're working with, outside of just the diet side of things, what are some concerns that you see with women in regards to weight loss, building muscle, just how they're feeling in that process?
So I do workouts with people. I do nutrition with people, and this is all very important, but the absolute most important piece, like I cannot stress this enough, the most important piece is the mental aspect of it all. If you do not have that piece, the perfect meal plan and workout is not going to work for you. It's just not going to work because you're mentally not there, or maybe you're trying to do it for the wrong reasons. You know, you're motivated by self-hatred and self-loathing. You're not going to get there. You're going to sabotage yourself eventually. Like, you need to work on how you feel about yourself, how you view yourself. Are your goals even realistic? Or are you trying to achieve some impossible standard of beauty that it's only going to serve to make you feel worse about yourself in the long run? So really focusing in on those pieces, I think, is even more important than the, well, how much brown rice should I have with dinner? Like, at the end of the day, that's super easy, right? But the mental part is a lot, lot harder. And it creeps into every single aspect of your life, every second of your day. You can be shit talking yourself in your head if you're not careful. So you have to work on that. And that is, it usually surprises people when they start working with me how much we focus on that, because they didn't even realize this was going on. And then once we start to put those pieces in place, it's like the whole world opens up to them. So that's my favorite thing about working with any clients, men or women, but with women, I feel like it's a little bit more ingrained into our society that it's okay to think about yourself like that. So I find that it usually goes a little bit deeper with women.
Yeah. I love that you're bringing this up. And this is why I loved working with you, because Dan is so real. And it's more than just the food and the exercise. And even from the hormone perspective, I always say that's the superficial layer. Like that, what you're eating, how much you're exercising, like that's the obvious, but then we need to get deeper. So how you're thinking about yourself. And I also say your stress levels too.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
That gets overlooked, and that impacts us on so many levels, from our hormones to your success with your weight loss, with your building muscle. And Danny, if you want to speak into this a little bit more, like if you're not sleeping good.
I was just going to say that.
And you're not rested. I had a feeling you would go there. How is this going to impact you building muscle? How is this going to impact you losing weight?
So sleep is another, sleep goes right hand. You nailed it. Stress levels, lifestyle, like just your lifestyle. How is your life set up? Are you surrounded with people that stress you out all day? Like, yikes, it's going to be really hard to do anything positive for yourself in that environment. Not sleeping enough is stress. That is stress on your body. You know, we forget that. We think it's just like this optional thing that we can do or not do. But when we sleep, our body resets so many things physically, mentally. This is when our brain literally organizes our thoughts, is when we're asleep. When you do not sleep enough, they've done tons of studies on this, and I'm not familiar with any studies on the hormones. Like, I know they get done, but I haven't looked much into them, but I'm sure you have and have talked about it before. But when it comes to weight loss and building muscle, I've seen studies on both. Lack of sleep, I can actually make you lose muscle and gain fat. Like if you are not, and I don't mean like not sleeping for a few days, I mean getting 6 hours of sleep a night for a week. You can gain body fat and lose muscle from that alone with no other dietary changes whatsoever. No activity changes. So sleep it's non-negotiable, and everybody needs different amounts of sleep. You know, my husband does beautifully on 6.5 hours of sleep a night. I would die if I did that. I need like 8 hours of sleep a night, just to function as well as I can. But some people are so sleep deprived for so long, they don't even understand how below normal they're functioning on a day-to-day level and how much it's impacting a lot of the things that they want to do with their life. But we always say like, oh, I'm so busy, I can't sleep. And there's this whole hustle culture, like, oh my God, I could talk about it forever, where it's like, oh, I'm going to grind away, I'll sleep when I'm dead. Like, you're not actually more productive in those hours if you're sleep deprived. So it's kind of like a moot point. Sleep, super, super important. And it's lack of sleep is just more stress, which I know you've talked about before.
Yeah. And it causes inflammation too, right? Like inflammation, I mean, I think it circles back to so many issues that people have. Inflammation is going to impact your weight loss. It is going to impact you building muscles. It's going to impact your hormones. It's going to impact you, how you're thinking, what you're eating. If you're sleep deprived and you wake up tired, you're more likely to have cravings throughout the day, and you're not craving more leafy greens. You're craving, you know, those unhealthy foods that you shouldn't really be eating.
Right. You're not your best self when you're tired. That's for sure. You're not making the best choices for yourself when you're tired.
Yeah. Any other suggestions or things that you have for your clients in regards to nutrition and stuff, just to help with building the muscle?
Yeah. So I think that habits are really, really important. Like just setting up really simple habits that you do regularly is going to be better than like this perfect plan that you do beautifully for 4 weeks and then never do again. Like I'd rather people do smaller habits kind of forever. So when it comes to muscle building specifically, you have to be eating enough. And this is a huge, 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 huge issue with women who are like afraid of eating enough. Because society has told them like, you have to be thin, you have to be this, you can't eat more than a salad or blah, blah, blah. But, you know, a lot of women say, I want to look toned. That's a very common thing that women say, but toned just means muscle. Like that's what the toned look is. It's not just like, oh, your body got harder. Like that's muscle. And in order to build that muscle, you know, we all learned in like sixth grade, matter can neither be created nor destroyed. You're not going to build muscle out of nothing. It needs to be made out of something. And that something is food. You have to eat enough food. So, you know, taking a look at the way your day is structured and just making sure that you're eating good, balanced meals, like at least three times a day, maybe a couple of good snacks in there as well. And then paired with that, you have to do the resistance training, right? And resistance training doesn't necessarily mean like lifting weights like a bodybuilder. It can be that. It can also be body weight resistance training, right? Like with a TRX or, you know, some styles of yoga can be resistance training with your body, but you have to be doing something, some kind of resistance training to kind of teach your body, hey, if we're going to keep doing this, we need to build a little bit more muscle so that this is easier. But you can't have one without the other. If you do the training, but you're not eating enough, you cannot build muscle. You can't do it. And if you're, you know, eating enough, but you're not doing some sort of resistance training, you might gain weight that is not muscle, which is like a lot of people's kind of worst fear. So you got to do them together at the same time. And kind of just learning the basic physics of that has helped kind of demystify this idea of building muscle. It's not that mysterious, but I just don't think it's explained to us very clearly for us to understand that, generally speaking.
Yeah. And I like that you're highlighting and really stressing you need to eat. You need to eat. Like, I'm sure there's times that you are having your clients actually really increase their calories or macros, and all of a sudden their body, like they're losing that fat. You know, there is that fear like, oh my God, if I eat more, I'm going to get fatter. But really, if you're having this nice balance between diet and weight training, all of a sudden that fat kind of disappears and you're like, oh, the muscle's showing up now.
Yeah. Well, a lot of times women have been under eating for so long, you know, just like I said, lack of sleep is stress. Under eating is also stress. So if you've been under eating for a long period of time, your stress is high, your cortisol is high, your fat burning hormone leptin is low. So once you kind of teach your body, like, hey, I'm going to feed you, I'm going to give you the food that you require, your stress levels are going to start to come down. Your leptin is going to be able to go back up. So not only, you know, when the cortisol comes down, water retention comes down pretty significantly. But then the leptin goes back up. Your body just starts to kind of work like the machine that it was meant to work like. When we are under eating, we are putting our body in a state of like fight or flight mode. And it just starts shutting down processes that we need to be healthy in an effort to just keep us alive. Like your body is always trying to just keep you alive. It's got your best interest at heart, but you got to work with it. And eating enough is definitely part of that.
Yeah. I'm going to say two things to that. One, your body's trying to keep you alive. So any ladies here listening, if you're not eating enough, over-exercising, which is going to be the next comment I'm going to say, is this could be why you're missing your period. This is why you could be having irregular periods, because your body's number one job is to take care of you. And if you're not, you know, keeping your lifestyle up, your nutrition up, how are you going to support a child? And that's when your reproductive hormones begin to shut down, because your body's thinking, I need to survive. I can't support somebody else. Mm-hmm. So eating your foods, and then this is going to be the next comment I'm going to say, is on the flip side of what you're saying, Danny, is making sure you're eating enough is how often do you see over-exercising? And then your same thing's happening. You're like, I'm not losing weight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It's you know, because I work with a lot of bodybuilders. I mean, I work with people with all different goals and starting positions and stuff, but my reputation started as like, I work with bodybuilders. And like we just said, bodybuilding, the sport itself, not healthy. Many women are going to lose their period right before they step on stage. And, you know, I think you can do this as healthy and balanced as you want. And there's still a high likelihood of that because we were never meant to be that lean in the first place. Like we just weren't. And body fat is really important for health, you know, a certain amount of it. But because I work with bodybuilders, a lot of people get that lean and then they are hooked. They're hooked. They want to stay there. They'll do anything they can to stay there. So they keep dieting. They continue to do tons of cardio well into the off season. Like they do not need to be doing this kind of cardio. And rather than maybe missing their period for a month, which is already not ideal, but they're missing it for months. It's taking a long time for it to come back. And some people, it doesn't come back because they can't break out of that mindset. You know, they can't break out of that, the hamster wheel, the literal hamster wheel that they've kind of backed themselves into. Luckily that doesn't happen with my clients because I hammer that point home so much, but sometimes somebody will come to me from another situation and they're like, dude, I don't know what's going on. Haven't had my period in almost a year. You know, talking to doctors and stuff like that. But then I look at what they're doing and I'm like, well, you know, you're eating 1400 calories and still doing 90 minutes of cardio five times a week. Like that is where the problem is. We got to start there. So over-exercising is a huge problem when it comes to that sort of obsession with this particular like body look that people are going for. They think that's what they need to do to keep it. And that might be what they need to do to keep that body look, which should be indicative of the fact that they shouldn't be trying to keep that particular body look. So that's a tough conversation that I've had to have with a lot of clients. Like, you know, I'm a competitive bodybuilder. I'm a champion figure competitor, but I do not look like that outside of that very short window of time when I'm actually competing. And I spend years not looking like that, looking, you know, with higher body fat than you would expect from a quote unquote champion figure competitor, because for me to stay there, it's not healthy for me. And I know that. So I try to live by example and show people like, yeah, you can get there, but you are probably not going to be able to stay there. And that's okay. You know?
Yeah. And I love that. And once again, I'm going to just say this. That's why I loved working with you, because you do show a good example and you are a very great role model and support. And I also like that you highlight that, you know, whether I don't want to talk about say so much if you're competing, but even if you're looking at these competitors online, mm-hmm. that is not ideal. And for one person, one woman, 17% body fat might be okay. For another,
right.
you might need 23% body fat. So it's really dialing into your body. Remember, it is your body and you got to just find that balance that makes you feel good yeah. on all levels, physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, I even say, you know, just mm-hmm. on all levels. And if it means that, you know, you have a little extra fat on you, that is okay. Because in the long run, you're going to feel much better.
Yeah. You're going to be healthier. You're going to stay healthier for longer. Like, yeah, like you said, every person's kind of balance, everybody's happy place, like I like to call it, is going to be a little bit different. Some people, you know, some of us would like our happy place to be a little lower than it actually is, but it is what it is. And at the end of the day, you'd rather be healthier. And the other thing about looking at like fitness competitors or fitness models, even on social media, very, very deceiving stuff. Because first of all, social media is a lie. Let's get that out of the way right now. but I mean, nobody's posting a picture of themselves looking incredible on Instagram and being like, don't I look amazing? Oh, by the way, I haven't had a cycle in 7 months. Like people aren't saying that. So you're not getting the whole picture. And it's just really important to remember that this person might look amazing in their photo, but they might need like to nap at noon every day because they're just crashing so hard. You have no idea. So it's really easy for us to see things on social media and think, wow, that person has it all. I wish I had that. But because I've worked with so many high level athletes, I know for a fact that a lot of them are not, they're portraying something that is not necessarily reality. But we forget that because we're human, you know?
Yes. Yes. Very important. Thank you so much for being here today, Danny, and sharing all your knowledge. Is there any last thoughts that you'd like to share?
No. Well, thank you so much for having me. This was really fun. This is a little different than some of the other podcasts I've been on. So very cool. I love this women's health podcast. But no, I don't have a whole lot more to add. If anybody wants to get in touch with me or has questions for me, you can find me on Instagram at Vegan Proteins, or you can find all of our like coaching stuff at veganproteins.com. And you can shoot us an email there too.
Okay, great. And I'll put everything in the show notes. So, everyone knows where to find you. And Instagram awesome. Is Vegan Proteins as well, correct?
Yep. Yep.
All right.
Everything is Vegan Proteins.
Making it simple for everybody. Well, thank you once again, Dani, for being here. And ladies, I will see you next week.